Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Really looking forward to this show tonight because there has been so much breaking news and news that is really important and relevant for the Celeste Rivas investigation. It's unbelievable. We are going to break it all down tonight. For those who don't know this story, basically there was a young girl. Her name was Celeste Rivas Hernandez, and I'll put up her initial missing poster. She was reported missing, even though she came into the picture at least one time at her home that we've all seen on video. But essentially, she was missing, but really not missing. She was with David, who's a famous, if you will, or somewhat famous artist, music artist, that actually doesn't have a bad voice. And he has millions and millions and millions of downloads, especially now. And she went missing and again was sort of in a relationship with David and ended up being found in the front trunk. We call it the front of a Tesla after being parked very near his house and being towed off. Then once it was towed, a horrible smell emanated and police were called and Celeste was found. Initially, the whole case kind of blew up from a media standpoint initially because the media was just trying to figure out who she was. So there were actually a lot of clues very early on regarding her being dismembered, weighing only 70 pounds, and so on and so forth. But we've gotten a lot more very specific information very recently. Who I have here tonight to break it down, and I just love doing shows with these guys. They're great. Drunk Turkey, I just like to say that name. It just sounds cool. Drunk Turkey, who is Daniel. He is with us tonight, former law enforcement. Thank you, Daniel, for gracing us with your presence. And then, of course, we can't do a show about this without Philip Dubé, who was a former prosecutor in Los Angeles and a former federal public defender. Who better to know the local laws? And this would not be a federal case. This would be a local case. Who better to help us break down from the legal standpoint? Hi, guys.
Evening, folks. Good evening. How's it going?
Well, I am so glad y'all are here. Actually, I'm going to make sure we put chat up because I already see some interesting chat going up. But really happy to have y'all here because of this breaking news. Specifically, we're going to talk about all the new news. First of all, according to the most recent news, and this is from multiple sources through multiple outlets, TMZ broke it, ABC, CBS, a lot of stations have broken this news, but not only that he is a subject, which in my view was the biggest news, and that's fairly recent since the three of us were on talking, but we have very specific details about Celeste being decapitated, so head off, torso intact, legs and arms removed, and then those sliced up, so not just, you know, one removal of those, multiple pieces, that she was frozen, and that in fact, when she was found, she was partially frozen. That's one we're really going to need to bite off. Again, she was left on 729 on the street. We have that information too. So July 29th, not found until September 8th. So that's a long time for her to remain frozen in Los Angeles, closed up in a plastic bag in a trunk. But again, there could be other conveyances for her. And a couple more items of new news. They have tracked apparently David going to San Bernardino to a remote area late at night, in the middle of the night, that they find interesting, and that was in the spring, nothing more detailed than that. And that there is also another suspect. Hmm. Not just David, as of course, from the beginning, I said, nobody's gonna dismember somebody and do all this on their own, way too much. Plus he's kind of an isolationist sort. But let me start with you, Philip. Just say, first of all, there seems to be a lot of concern that the medical examiner is never going to be able to determine the manner or the cause of death. If that happens and we're left with these facts, say they're able to pinpoint that two individuals dismembered and put her in the trunk, but they can't prove that she, you know, was alive when they did that. So in other words, this wasn't a homicide per se. What kind of charges can they be looking at?
Well, first of all, desecration of human remains. You can't just arbitrarily dispose of human remains in California without going through the coroner's office or without going through a hospital or the LA County morgue. You have to go through either a private institution or a government agency to make a record of it. If you don't, it's an actual crime. You have to report the death. You can't just leave human remains in your car, on your property, and just pretend it doesn't exist. You can't just bury your head in the sand and assume it's just going to go away on its own, and that you have no legal duty to make sure that the remains are properly disposed of. It's an independent crime. The problem is, it's not the crime of the century. It's pretty low grade, obviously, in comparison to an assault with a deadly weapon, to a kidnap, to a sex charge, and certainly to homicide. So it's not really the crime of the century, but it certainly could be enough to bring one or both of these suspects in. And you never know, they might set up a Perkins operation where they're pointing the finger at each other and talking, not knowing that everything's being recorded. Or they might be interrogated, get properly Mirandized, and end up coming clean, one or both. Or maybe one will come clean and point the finger at the other one. But in any event, it would be enough to hold them. And then a judge would decide at arraignment what, if any, bail to set, and if the matter should proceed to a preliminary hearing if it's a felony, or if it's a misdemeanor, frankly, they could be released OR.
Okay, wait a minute. A couple of things here. You talked about only one crime. Is that the top charge, if you will? There's no other charges, you think, just based on sort of the facts we know? Body found in trunk, dismembered, and that's all we've got. And then what would be the punishment? What's the highest sentence they could get for that under California law?
Well, if it's all posthumous, meaning that everything happened after the fact, I think the most that they could be looking at is what's called a Penal Code 32, which is an accessory after the fact, meaning you're cleaning up the crime scene, you're getting rid of the body, you're getting rid of the instrumentality of death. And that is what we call a wobbler in the state of California, meaning it can be filed as a misdemeanor or a felony, or even if it is filed as a felony, a judge can reduce it to a misdemeanor. The bottom line is this: as a misdemeanor, it tops out at 1 year county jail. As a felony, maximum of 3 years county jail, of which you would only serve half.
It's just sickening. But I wanted to know where we were at least legally, with the current kind of facts we know. Mm-hmm. Daniel, I want to talk to you about one of these new items, particularly one that I think everybody is kind of blowing up about. And this was the idea of her being frozen. Mm-hmm. Now, in my experience, if you're going to freeze a body for a long period of time, and to me, if you're freezing it beyond, I don't know, an hour, I don't know, to me, any amount of time you're freezing a body is a long amount of time, but we're talking now months. The information is the spring. So a very long time to July 29th when that car was parked. What really stands out to me is the fact that they said, at least in this reporting, that she was still partially frozen. Mm-hmm. What's going through your mind when you're hearing all of this?
Well, one of the things that they also mentioned here recently, me, myself, and Dr. Vona were covering this case, and we're listening to another news team break some information. And one of the things that they broke was that the body had cuts on it that appeared that those cuts happened over time, not necessarily at the same time. And that's kind of when I got the idea that she was probably in a freezer for a very long time. There's probably signs of freezer burn that could show differences of when it was at, these cuts were being made. And then sure enough, that ends up happening. Now, it sounds like she's probably in some sort of industrial freezer, or a freezer that is capable of very low temperature. And, I think there's a video of a chest freezer in the background of one of his videos that was on social media. And it was one that had over 7 cubic feet of space. And it was a lot of people are kind of pointing at that being the possibility. But the fact that she was in a vehicle in Los Angeles during September and she was still thawing out tells us that she was probably in that freezer for a very long time. Now, Steve Fisher, an investigator who went into the rental property, he had talked about there being, I believe, farming equipment that was found or still left at the place that he said that he thought could have been used to further get rid of the body, destroy evidence and things of that nature. I wonder if, whatever that equipment was, the fact that she froze to the extent that she did prevented them from utilizing that equipment.
Yeah, when I think of it, and there's a lot online now of this fancy, sub-zero freezer, refrigerator side by side. And I don't know. That is not where my mind went. My mind went to the other information we've seen of your normal big freezer, like has been used in other crimes too, often.
And yeah, that's the kind that was, that was the kind that the chest freezer, the small one. Yeah, that's the kind that was found in a video in the background. It was brand new because it was still in a box. People are pointing it out. And it was in a box. September 2024 was when it was seen in the background of, I believe it was the house that he was staying in, not the place that he was renting.
Yeah, I find the whole thing very interesting because, first of all, those freezers, I think she could fit in without decapitating, without doing what they did to her. Mm-hmm. She was small. She was 5'2", about my size, almost exactly. And you can fit somebody in a freezer, in a chest freezer. You can't fit them in that teeny little, Tesla trunk. But nevertheless, I just want to talk a little bit about why somebody would freeze somebody. And I see only three reasons. One is to slow down decomposition. The other, obviously, to conceal without the smell and odor. And then the other one, and I've looked up case after case after case today, of individuals who killed individuals for the purpose of cannibalism and necrophilia. My mind went here when I was discussing this with a, seasoned homicide detective friend of mine. We were just going back and forth. And that was the first thing that popped to his mind. Philip, what do you think about that possibility? And have you ever seen it in any cases, even if it wasn't your case in your career?
Oh, yeah. There's a big one pending right now here in L.A. It's in the city of Compton. An entire family, including grandma, allegedly murdered, I believe it was a grandson that they found stuffed in a compact freezer, I think, in the garage of the home. So each of these co-defendants has counsel, and I believe it's filed as a capital case right now. So it's not as uncommon as you might think. I've had freezer cadaver cases in my career, not a lot of them, but we do see them. And I believe, just based on my interaction with the clients over the years, that the main impetus behind freezing it is that it doesn't dawn on anybody to look in a freezer for human remains. So they think that they have found a place to conceal and secrete the remains without getting caught. It seems that it would be a lot easier than being seen or caught carrying out a footlocker or a large hefty bag, or having two or more people lifting something that appears to be bulky and heavy out of a property. You draw too much attention to yourself. But if it's done somewhere where the public really has no visibility, there's certainly no drone activity or anybody that could see what's happening, the freezer, for whatever reason, just kind of comes to mind for many criminals. We saw sort of hues of this in California with an unsolved murder in 1947. I don't know if you've ever read about this unsolved murder. It involved Elizabeth Short. She was a wannabe starlet from Michigan who made her way out to California. And she, to this day, they don't know who did it, but they think it was a surgeon, where they literally found her body transected in a field in Hollywood, right out here in California. To this day, that murder went unsolved. And the question for everybody is, first of all, why would somebody dump that body in such an open and notorious place? But the truth is, back then, it was desolate. There was nobody there. It was just this sort of untilled, undeveloped land where somebody just happened upon human remains. It was terrible. That was the Black Dahlia. I don't know if you ever heard about that unsolved murder. But nonetheless, so what you can kind of extrapolate from that is people in panic mode look for a place to conceal human remains, and they think that nobody would ever get caught if the remains are stuffed in a freezer.
So I find that interesting, because my mind went to a lot of different reasons. When I think, and I've always said this, whenever it's dismemberment, it's typically to hide the crime, try to, have the person be more difficult for identification, take a longer amount of time, things like that, to hide the crime. Sometimes there are different body parts left in different places. Sometimes it's to just facilitate concealing it in a barrel or in a trunk or in a small place. But when you add to it the freezing standpoint, Daniel, do you agree with me how that just adds such a more sinister component?
Oh, 100%. And then you kind of look at some of his artistic views and some of the things that he was doing around the time that is alleged that Celeste has lost her life. You know, he's making these videos. One of them, I had it pulled up. It was one where he's in the trunk and these two people are taking him out. They're burying him in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, you look at his artistic views, you look at how she was found. Yeah, 100%. It seems like there's something sadistic to it, you know, to a certain extent as well. You know, the multiple cuttings and then the continual cutting, as I mentioned before, that's weird. I mean, the whole thing is weird, but you spoke about possible cannibalism. And that's kind of where my mind went when I heard that there was like cutting over time, and it's on the limbs and multiple cuts and multiple pieces. And, you know, again, his music and everything else kind of just kind of points to art or life imitating art.
Yeah, this sets up perfectly this video I want to play really quick in his own words, where he talks about this. And what really caught me, and I think I have this downloaded here, was his facial expression when he talks about all of this. Here we go. This was an interview of David.
Is a means of coping.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
But you saying expecting it, meaning like you get into a friendship expecting it to end in a devastating, tragic, sad way so it can inspire art, but are you manifesting that in a certain
way? I don't know. I hope I'm not. I really hope I'm not, because it feels that way. Because like I look back to old songs like Life's a Dream and all these songs I wrote in my closet or my sister's closet in 2022, when I'm looking at my life in the past 8 to 9 months, I'm like, whoa, like, bro, these songs are soundtracking my life. So I hope I'm not involuntarily doing that, but it might be that way.
So that was so eerie, obviously, when I heard out of his own mouth, sort of him making the conflating both together. And then I want to read really quick just a little bit of this lyrics from Celeste, the one that actually I played that recording on my Twitter. Have you guys seen or heard that Celeste song?
I've heard excerpts. Not all.
I also have heard just parts and pieces of it as well. You know, there was another clip of him circulating where there was supposedly Celeste's voice in one of the songs saying, I love you. And in one of these clips after the fact, sometime around the spring of this year, he talks about how he's not with the person that says that anymore. Kind of weird.
It's really eerie. But anyway, part of this verse is, darling, I would love to ease your mind, but you only open up when you get high. If I had money, I would buy us time just to get us by, just to stay high. Oh, Celeste, the girl with my name tattooed on her chest. Smell her on my clothes like cigarettes. I hear the voice each time I take a breath. I'm obsessed. Oh, Celeste, afraid you'll only love me when undressed. But you look so damn gorgeous in that dress. Missing you so much makes me depressed, but I digress, because I love you so much, baby. And I do want to preface this, that this was written before this crime happened. But this was the part that I thought was really strange. So what's it like to not need weed to get me high? I love it when you hold me and when you cry, just because, be my Valentine. I want to make Cupid suicidal. These are the kinds of thoughts that cross my mind. And I thought that was weird. Is Cupid suicidal, meaning her, making her suicidal? And I, ever since I read that, and it's been quite a while, I thought, did he try to talk her into anything? Philip or Daniel, did you ever see that? And did that text strike you as minimally eerie and macabre, and at worst, a play out of what he wanted?
So I've actually talked a little bit about this song with Dr. Vona. And one of the things that I've noticed when it comes to David's art, and we spoke about this, was that he kind of plays both parties in his music and in his videos. And I had wondered if the song was a back and forth. You know, it was him and then her, then him, than her, like when he says, I like it when you hold me when you cry, or something of that nature. Kind of sounded more like coming from her perspective. But and if that's the case, you know, it basically, when we were breaking it down, it almost seemed like, yes, he was possibly manipulating her, but also abusive towards her as well. Obviously, I mean, with what happened, it seems like that's the case as well.
Well, when I was singing that song, it was beautiful. But go ahead, Philip. I mean, beautiful in a macabre way. Go ahead, Philip. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. I have a different interpretation. I mean, when you look at it just textually, just on its face, what does it mean when you hope that Cupid commits suicide? Really, what it sounds like to me is a sort of a symbolic way of implying that you don't want to be love struck. You want that this love struck relationship not exist. And you can interpret that to mean that because of the age difference between the two of them, the criminality involved. So you want Cupid to commit suicide so we are not in love, so that we are not drawn to one another, and so that I am not arrested for having a relationship with an underage girl. That's how I read it. But do I really read it to mean that Cupid is the archer who I want to shoot the bow and arrow to kill Celeste? No, I think that is a bridge too far, for me anyway.
Yeah, I think that every person who, and I really, for me, when I heard that song, first of all, I was surprised it was as good as it was, meaning that he actually, he doesn't sing as good as you, Philip, but, you know, I really
said this repeatedly. I've never even heard of this kid.
Yeah, you know, well, of course.
I grew up with Trudy Lopez, Paul Anka, Gladys Knight, and Sarah Vaughan. I wouldn't know David D4DD to save my life. I really wouldn't, you know? So
he actually has a nice voice, and that song Celeste, I was surprised at how much I didn't mind listening to it. I want to move over though to Romantic Homicide. I'm scared. It feels like you don't care. Enlighten me, my dear. Why am I still here? I don't mean to be complacent with the decisions you made, but why? In the back of my mind, you died, and I didn't even cry, not even a single tear, and I'm sick of waiting patiently for someone that won't even arrive. In the back of my mind, I killed you, and I didn't even regret it. I can't believe I said it, but I don't. I hate you. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? Daniel?
It sounds like he had some pent-up emotions throughout for a while. You know, I mean, obviously this was written before, you know, the death of Celeste. And so he wasn't writing necessarily about that situation in that moment because it hadn't happened yet. But it kind of gives you a an insight to his feelings, his thoughts, especially when it comes to romance and having a partner and his feelings of jealousy, his feelings of unable to control and being obsessive, you know, to a certain extent and compulsive. So again, you know, art imitating life. I think there's a lot of that in this.
Philip?
Well, this is exactly why our legislature added 352.2 to our evidence code, that mere poetic expressions should not be introduced at a criminal trial to prove guilt, because it is so prejudicial. There are so many innocent explanations for one's prose, poetry, spiritual writings, music lyrics, whatever, that to try to distill from that an intent to kill or some type of futuristic image of death that is forthcoming is just so wildly speculative. To put that in front of a jury in a murder trial, I think would be very prejudicial. And I think our lawmakers and certainly our courts have recognized that the probative aspect of it, in other words, what, if anything, it could prove, is substantially outweighed by the prejudicial effect. It's just way too prejudicial.
You know, until I saw that interview of him with the that I just showed, where he talks about how he wrote and then it ends up playing out in his life in that interview. And that interview was done in April of 2025. Okay. He says that. We just all heard it. And it made me wonder, all these songs that he writes, does he write and then get off on having the song play out, having it come to life, having it be real? And I mean, that's kind of what he says. Oh, I sure hope not. But geez, it seems like that's what's happening. Do you think, Philip, that video, and there's several other videos of him really talking about his artistic expression being really an expression of his life. Do you think those could be brought in?
Well, I think maybe, but only if his greatest hits really do imitate real life, his real life, his version of life. But if all it is just sort of dark, macabre, morose type music and thoughts and ramblings, then again, that is his style of music. That is his style of lyricism. But does that prove a homicide? I think it's a stretch. And I think that's why the legislature recognized that courts need to be reined in on this stuff so people aren't convicted based on poetry. And that's ultimately what I think it is. But if you really do separate each of his hits, each of his songs, and see if any of them really did ever come to fruition, or if it's just like his wild imagination, then we leave it to the wild imagination, we leave it to music, we leave it to art, and not for a criminal jury, because that's the forum where it belongs.
Well, I just think there's so much possible other evidence. There's a lot that we know already that does imitate what he said. First of all, he obviously was in a relationship with Celeste, and then there's a song that talks about a relationship with Celeste, and then there's a trunk, and there's, you know, dragging someone around and all of that, and a death. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, to me, I think that in the end, his music that he had beforehand isn't going to be what the jury should see. It's the evidence based on the merit itself on the crime that they can prove that he committed this crime without a, you know, reasonable doubt. And I think they have that. I mean, when you start looking at some of the things that they've said and they've put out there to this point, you know, I know they haven't gotten a warrant and an arrest, but they're talking.
Oh, Daniel.
Yeah.
You said they haven't gotten a warrant. So sorry.
Sorry. I know they haven't gotten any warrants or things of that nature, but what we do know is that they said that they were talking to a suspect, and or that there's a suspect, the second one, and that they think that this suspect was involved before, during, and after, possibly the person that moved the Tesla. Now, some of those things that you're going to be able to figure out, you know, through, you know, self-service, I think you mentioned social media tracking and things like that. The Tesla itself, you might be able to kind of get an idea of some aspect of a second person, but to have some of the things that have come out about this second person sounds to me like that second person is talking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that right now this whole situation's, you know, the coroner's not going to be able to make a determination on what caused death, but that's not always needed. I mean, I've seen people get arrested and convicted without a body. And so I think what they were waiting on up to this point was to determine if there was something else that could be an explanation, such as a toxicology report or something of that nature that could say that it wasn't a homicide, that it was something else. Now, I know David's going to have his lawyers and things of that nature, and they're going to try to pick those things apart. But to me, I think the merit of the case and the evidence itself should be what either makes him guilty or not, not necessarily the art that much earlier. Now, I mean, when he starts, you know, talking about certain things, you know, with like, you know, how the one girl in this one song is no longer in his life, how he's crying, you know, on a song called Afterlife in a live showing in Houston in the springtime, that I think you might be able to get used. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
I just think in any case, if you know, as an investigator, I'm going to put all evidence forward to the prosecutor. Obviously, the prosecutor is going to have to make that decision. But I think it's the totality when you add it all together, especially everybody's asking the question, what in the world was the motive for this? Really, what in the world? It wasn't, I mean, this went on forever. It wasn't like they were getting ready to be found out or her family was in their business. I mean, family seemingly wasn't at all involved with her. She was missing other than when she came back home for her birthday in 2024. So what was the real motive here? And I think, you know, like I said, I think it's going to be really dark when it comes out, the motive. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it, you know, her being underage is a motive enough. He is a motive. Opportunity means, you know, to have committed this crime, and in my opinion, at least. And, you know, he was about to go on tour and he was living in a place where there's a lot of other people. Maybe perhaps because of how long he was going to be gone, he thought they'd move the body. You know, they had the farming equipment there. For whatever reason, maybe perhaps because of the state of the remains being so frozen, they couldn't utilize that equipment. And so they were leaving, had nothing, you know, afraid somebody was going to find it inside the freezer that maybe could be visiting the home. They panicked and put her in the Tesla thinking they'd come back in a couple of days and move it. And it got towed. Mm-hmm.
But remember, it was in there a long time. July 29th. Until the tow date.
Yeah.
That's a long time. I'm
not convinced of it.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm not convinced that her body was in the car as long as everybody might think. I don't think it was there as long as the car was parked out front there. I really don't. And the reason why is because her body was partially frozen. If the body had been in there from day one, that body would, first of all, would have had no signs of being frozen unless you could see some type of freezer burns on her remains. But the body wouldn't even be, you know, below Celsius anymore. It would just be a decomposing human cadaver wrapped in plastic in his car. I mean, think of it as a frozen turkey, not to be so blunt and crass about it. If you put a frozen turkey in the trunk of a car and leave it there for 2 months, it's not going to be frozen, not even partially, even if it's wrapped in plastic. It's going to thaw out and it's going to start to putrefy and rot. That's exactly what a human body would do. So I don't think it was there as long as everybody thinks. I think it was sort of a last minute sort of makeshift holding ground for the remains until they found time to drive off and dispose of her remains. Unfortunately, the car got impounded. And in the city of LA, we have a municipal ordinance here that a car cannot remain parked on a public street for 72 consecutive hours or longer because it's deemed to be the unlawful storage of a vehicle. And if you keep a car there that long and somebody calls it in or a parking attendant comes by, they're not going to just cite it. At some point, they can actually tow it. They can cite it, but if there's repeated violations, they can tow it. And that's probably what happened here. It got picked up, they inventoried the car, and voila, they find this young lady's remains.
Well, they actually called police as it sat in after it was towed because of the smell of it. So it wasn't even the inventory, but I agree with you, Philip, that happens a lot. But this is the problem with that timing. On the 29th, he leaves to go on tour. Everybody leaves, him, everybody, so he's out of the picture and that car is sitting there. And at least if we're to believe the PI that was hired by the mansion owner, that car sat there with the body in it, that nobody, you know, put a body in later or did anything. I was wondering if dry ice was used. I was wondering if there's Yetis. All we see is that picture and I have it right here. Hopefully, Daniel, I don't flip you off here. Flip you out like I did before I pressed the wrong button. But this is what we see. But was there anything else? I mean, this is the frunk. What about the trunk? Could there have been a Yeti? Could there have been dry ice? Could there have been some sort of, I still agree with you. You know, if I have my turkey out, I just put it out. That thing is going to be completely thawed by Thursday morning.
Exactly. It has to be stored in an environment that remains cold. Sometimes we see this in cryogenics, you know, that's that ambulance to the future, as it were, where you freeze a deceased person with a almost like a perfused cryoprotectant in there, and you keep the remains on ice until you find a cure for whatever they died of. And that can remain outside of a deep freeze for a certain period of time, but at some point, those remains really do start to thaw out and they start to decompose. And it's no longer served the purpose for which you wanted the cryogenics to begin with. So I don't know, unless and until there was some type of profuse chemical put in her remains, I don't think she was in that funk very long. I don't.
I just think the timing and the reporting, we know she was there from 7:29 until she was found. But my question is it misreporting? Remember, a lot of what we're relying on, even though it seems to be accepted. I mean, what do you think, Daniel? Do you think the fact that purportedly the remains were somewhat frozen, do you think that's accurate?
Well, if he went to as far as to get farming equipment, I wonder what else he may have done. Now, Teslas don't come with a cooler, but there is an aftermarket thing that you can do to put a cooler in the trunk of a Tesla. I wonder if that's what he had done.
I think that could be possible. And like I said, if there is dry ice, and then I wondered, but I hadn't seen this reported by the PI. The PI says body was in there, was driven there and left alone until it was finally towed. And again, David was gone by then, so he couldn't have done it in between those dates. And his entourage, you know, I posted, and I know you have too, Daniel, a lot of pictures, you know, the day after of him partying and so on, you know, gone on the road with his entourage and the bus picking them up and all of that. But my question is couldn't there have been perhaps somebody go back and dry ice this thing where it remained somewhat frozen? Or do you think they were literally relying on that little, was it a Christmas tree air freshener to stop the smell of a decaying body? What do you think, Daniel?
Well, I mean, I think that it's possible that somebody could have gone back. If somebody did, those Teslas record constantly unless it died. You know, and it being parked out there that long, if it did have some sort of refrigeration to it, it probably isn't going to last very, very long either. But, you know, it didn't sound like somebody went back. You know what I'm saying? It didn't sound like that was the case, that someone went back throughout the time. But it's possible. I mean, if the Tesla died, I wonder if the Tesla's batteries died and does it stop recording those things? I mean, I know that maybe perhaps it doesn't turn on, but do certain functions stay longer than others? Possibly. And if it died being parked out there for such a long time, maybe perhaps somebody could have gone back without somebody being aware of it.
Well, I know Phillips had a Tesla. I have a Tesla. And I can tell you, you can make inoperable everything but the GPS. You can turn off the cameras. You can take it out of sentry mode. Mm-hmm. Make it so it's not recording everything, like when it opens, when it closes. You can do that with a flick of your finger on the dash computer. Mm-hmm. But what you can't control is the GPS. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have the GPS data. Is that your understanding too, Philip?
Yes. Well, first of all, there's three camera systems. They have what's called the cabin camera, where it's actually recording everything in the interior of the vehicle. Okay. And it does, to some extent, record audio, not conversations, but commands. Like if you want to know, you know, or tell it to make a call, or if you wanted to put the radio on or something like that, it may record that. Then certainly they have the sentry mode, where the vehicle is recording everything going on outside the car. So if you ever get a ding on your door, you can see who caused it. You know, or if somebody keys the car, you can see who did it. It's all recorded. Now, if the battery is uncharged, I do believe that the sentry mode is still operating by a satellite. And I think that is one of the features of the Tesla technology. And then the third, obviously, is the dash cam, which is recording everything in real time as the car is driving around. That I'm not so sure is still activated if the battery is dead. And frankly, you wouldn't need it to operate because the car is parked. But I think here we're going to know more about how Celeste remains got in that car when the sentry mode data is revealed in court, assuming it gets that far. But I do believe at some point there are going to be court proceedings with century mode data and footage being played to the court.
And I think that's only if the century mode was not disabled, which you can do. And a lot of people don't know there's two batteries in a Tesla. There's the battery that's underneath that runs the whole vehicle, and there's a secondary battery. And the reason I know about the secondary battery is the secondary battery that controls a lot of things we're talking about, whether you can get in your car, whether you can get out of it, all of that, that is a separate battery because ours died.
It's like a backup generator kind of?
No.
No?
It actually controls completely different. It doesn't control the engine or that operation. It controls all the little things we're talking about right now. And ours went dead. We had to have it towed. It was a complete nightmare. I mean, we had to get a new one. We had to buy a new one. We had to have Tesla come out and do that. And that, I mean, we were locked out of the car. Actually, what happened was my husband was locked in the car. The car would not work.
Sorry. Wow.
So, wow. You know, that's what my concern is. I think everybody thinks because this is such a advanced and sophisticated machine, which it really is, but there's a lot of components. And if that little battery was dead or made inoperable by anybody, or if certain functions were disabled, I'm not sure everything they're going to get. And in fact, I think if they had everything we thought they would have, we would probably have an arrest by now.
Oh, yeah. I think you're correct. But I truly believe that given the amount of time that's gone by, it may have taken forever to get the records from Tesla, to get the data. I have a feeling that this data was so deeply embedded somewhere in a purged file somewhere that it took all the king's men and all the king's horses to try to put it back together again, if you will, you know? So it's not an easy task, and it's certainly not something that you can do overnight.
Daniel, are you familiar with the Suzanne Morphew case at all? Or Philip? Either of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Slightly.
Out of Colorado, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's out of Colorado. And the only reason I bring it up, this was a woman. She was shot with a tranquilizer gun by her husband, allegedly. That's the charges. He was originally charged, and then there were issues with the prosecutor. Then there was never a body found initially. Years later, after they dismissed the case because of prosecutorial misconduct, they found the body. Mm-hmm. Then guess how long it took for them to charge him again, even though they had oodles of information before that, certainly beyond probable cause, and I would submit reasonable doubt before the body. 21 months.
Yeah, took forever. Yeah.
To finish full talks of the bones where they found the tranquilizer called BAM. And everything. So, I mean, Philip, I want you to talk about this a little bit. The infancy of where we're at in a complicated investigation where you have 70 pounds left of a body that's also been frozen.
Well, this is a textbook example of why murder does not have a statute of limitation. The law enforcement does not have to beat the clock. That's not their job because they have unfettered amount of time to put a case together and get it to the DA's. And it's for this very reason. It's not something, especially now in the modern age, that you can assemble in a couple of hours or in a couple of days or even in a couple of weeks. We are too dependent on too many third parties to assemble digital data. And unless and until you get all of it, you might not have an airtight case. And once you bring that case, you only get one shot. It's not like it's a dress rehearsal or a dry run. So you got to make sure you have all your ducks in a row. Or in theory, whoever did this really could walk because there was such a rush to build a case and it was had too many holes in it.
Daniel, let me ask you this. Totally, Philip states very well the law. But how about the concern that you have somebody or more than one somebody that's capable of freaking cutting somebody's head off, murdering them, cutting their limbs, cutting them the pieces out running around right now. Talk about that, Daniel, the sort of the balancing of making sure you have an airtight case and having these people out there. Daniel, did I lose you?
I accidentally muted. Yeah, no, it's 100% concerning. I mean, there's a safety concern to the public. You know, I understand that you're going to want to have an air solid case and things like that. I think that there are certain aspects of this investigation that are somewhat, you know, that you can bring charges against, maybe not necessarily the murder aspect, but, you know, harboring a runaway, enticing a child, you know, some of those type of things that had to deal with the relationship between Celeste and David to get him at the very least off the streets and an awareness that this is possibly a dangerous person. You know, last thing, you know, is somebody else ends up getting hurt throughout this ordeal. Now, I assume based on, you know, his wealth and the lawyers that he's got at his disposal and things of that nature, that the prosecution and law enforcement, they are going to make sure that their T's are crossed and their I's are dotted so that, you know, they that's, in my opinion, I think that's probably the holdup. But yeah, 100%. I think the public should be concerned that there's somebody out there that is capable of committing something like that.
And let me ask Philip to pony back off of what Daniel just said. Is the problem with charging just a harboring or contributing to the delinquency of a minor or some one of these smaller charges? Isn't the problem that really it's just a revolving door? They're just going to come in, plead, get a bond set, because they can't, a judge can't really consider this situation necessarily. They've got to consider the charge at hand when deciding bond. Talk to us about that. Do you think that could be part of the reason?
Well, a lot of it depends on the charge. Remember, in order to convict of a sex offense in California, you need a victim. You actually have to bring somebody into court who can testify that there was an unlawful lewd touching. And if all you have is just hearsay coming through, I don't know, a witness who spoke to Celeste 6 months before it happened, guess what? You know, David and I did the nasty. Well, that's not coming into evidence because it's hearsay. It's just not. That would violate the 6th and 14th Amendment to the Constitution. That would deny you the right to a fair trial and due process. You just can't do that. So you have to have some evidence that there was even an unlawful sexual touching. And in California, we have what's called the corpus delicti rule. And what that means is at the preliminary hearing stage, you cannot even use statements of the defendant to prove all the elements of a crime unless you have independent evidence of each element. So none of the statements can even come in until you can independently prove up all the other elements. The statements are kind of wrap a bow, if you will, tie a bow around the box, but you cannot use it substantively to prove your case. You've got to have a corpus. Without her to say that there was vaginal or digital or any other type of penetration, you don't have a sex charge. You just don't. Now, legally, how that hampers the prosecution is those counts are what carry the most time. Lewd act upon a minor under the age of 13, or 14 rather, I believe, carries up to 8 years without even a record. It can carry up to 8 years. But without her, you know, you just don't have it. I don't see how you could prove it. Now, there are other misdemeanor offenses that might be provable. So, for example, what if there was an independent witness who saw it all go down? A witness can absolutely come into court and testify, I saw David take off his pants. I saw David remove Celeste's pants. And I saw them get under the covers and have sex. That's how you can do it. But short of that, there's just not enough evidence to file a sex charge, let alone the murder.
Or if they have video, or if they have pictures. We all know how long this takes. Can you imagine the video? Because his whole life, as Daniel knows, because I know he's followed the evidence really closely too, this is a kid who admits his whole life is on, you know, the internet. That's what he says. He says he doesn't feel grass. This is a guy who his world is the internet. I can't imagine the volumes and volumes of evidence they've got to go through. Daniel,
but I gotta tell you, based on what's been released to the true crime space, I would absolutely defend this young man. I would do it pro bono. I just don't think there's enough evidence there to prove a murder. Now, obviously, the police probably have more than what's been revealed because he has been declared a suspect. okay? But certainly a suspect falls way below proof beyond a reasonable doubt of anything. A suspect really means they've got somebody that they really need to talk to, okay? But because that person ain't talking, he could really remain a suspect in perpetuity.
Daniel, what do you think about some of this other evidence that could exist, especially in light of his huge digital footprint that's got to be out there?
Well, you know, I wonder, you know, kids communicate, right? They talk, and the way they communicate and they talk is through a digital aspect. So online, text messages, and they send pictures, they send videos, things of that nature. And apparently, if they're using, I think the allegation is that on some of these songs, there's recordings of Celeste, and they've used her voice from these recordings, whether they're voicemails or whatever the case may be, that have been saved somewhere, and they've used them in this music. So I'm hoping that law enforcement is going to be able to go through some of those things and find some other things that could point towards more. You know, when it comes to the relationship aspect, I know that you mentioned the hearsay part, but if Celeste told, like, if her best friend comes forward and says, "Hey, I have these messages from Celeste. It's a voice message. It's a video message of her saying that she and David had an interaction." Is that still considered hearsay? I know, like, for instance, in the Karen Reed case, they utilized Trooper Proctor's text messages, and they didn't bring up him. They utilized people he text messaged, and they were able to introduce those messages through the people who received those messages, not Proctor, who was the person who was making those comments. Is that still not possible to bring in?
Well, we have what's called exceptions to the hearsay rule, and we also have what's called hearsay offered for a non-hearsay purpose. And all that really means is that either it falls within an exception to the rule against hearsay, or you're not offering these statements to prove what they say. You're offering them to prove something else. So a court can let those into evidence, but give the jury a limiting instruction that they're instructed to receive those non-hearsay purpose statements for a non-hearsay purpose. And they're so instructed that when they deliberate on it, that they only utilize those statements for that limited purpose. But the truth be told, you're asking jurors to parse words. Once they've heard it, it's like you cannot unring that bell. And it can be quite prejudicial for hearsay to come in for a non-hearsay purpose and use this tortured legal logic to allow it in. But in theory, you are correct. They could come into evidence if the prosecution can come up with a real sort of astute reason why it should come in, and a judge will allow it. There's great deference to discretionary rulings by trial judges in our law.
Good to know. So,
as the last catch-all question I want to ask both of you, first of all, is there anything else I'll ask this one of Daniel. Is there anything I'm missing of sort of the new revelations that we ticked off? I think I ticked off about 8 of them. Is there anything I'm missing or any component that you found out in your investigation? For instance, the picture of the deep freeze chest freezer that was in the background on a video that was new. Is there anything else you want to enlighten our audience and Philip and I about that you found?
So the only thing is that law enforcement, according to TMZ, don't believe that Celeste was ever buried out there in Santa Barbara, in the middle of nowhere. They believe that that's where the dismemberment happened. Now, I'm assuming and I'm hoping that with the GPS locations and things of that nature, that that location will be found, you know. And so it brings up a lot of, oddities, like questions. You know, why go all the way out there to do the dismemberment, and why bring her back? You know, and put her in a freezer. Why not bury her while you're out there and all these other things? But yeah, a lot of question marks. And I think one of the things that TMZ has kind of set out there is that when it comes to this investigation, that logic is something that you may have to put on the back burner. And to me, I mean, yeah, you know, people make dumb mistakes. People do stupid things. But if you're going to present a case to somebody about somebody, you got to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is somebody under the influence. This is somebody that's not a career criminal. This is somebody that's never murdered somebody before, dismembered anybody before. And I think a lot of the reasoning would have been completely irrational for their moves. But I totally agree with you, Daniel. In a court of law, they better be able to spell out what they believe happened and have the evidence to back it. Philip, anything we're leaving out in terms of the legal?
Just one final thought and a reminder to people. Out here in California, we have what's called the California Public Records Act, the CPRA. And basically what it says is that the inner workings of government are public record, but like everything else, there are exceptions. And one of them is law enforcement investigations that are still ongoing. And you're getting a lot of these Karens, demanding, insistent people who want white glove concierge treatment when they call the station, the precinct, the coroner's office, demanding answers, people from the media. And it's like, halt, we don't have a legal obligation to give it to you right now. We just don't. They're not going to alert the media with details that if they go public, it could cause the suspect to go on the run, or certainly could cause the suspect not to cooperate in the future. So they're not going to reveal anything right now until it's time to make an arrest or until a true bill of indictment is handed down by a grand jury.
Great, great. You know, I love having you both on. I don't know if there's anyone's, if there's any other show with the common sense that you display, Daniel, and the legal knowledge that you display, Philip. So thank you so much for being here tonight. And I hope we continue to do this with big, you know, news on the Celeste case. I'd love to keep doing this case with you too.
Yes, ma'am. I'm down.
I'm down.
All right, you two. Have a great evening. And next time.
All right. Be well, everybody. Take care.
See y'all later.
Slow on the go here. You're still looking good up there, Philip. Bye. Everybody, I can't tell you how much I appreciate y'all being here. I think that they are just such great guests to break this down and come from such different angles. So I really appreciate y'all. I'll be going back and reading the comments. I have a News Nation hit tonight on a completely different case right now. So I'm going to have to sign off. But again, thank you so much. I can't wait to read these comments because there's such great slews out there and people really care about justice for Celeste. I think all of us are worried about, are these two people now or more, are they going to skate on this deal? I think law enforcement will get them, but I think it's going to be a while. All right, everybody. Until next time, may justice be served.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.